Hello, and welcome everyone. Can everyone hear me? Well, it's so good to be back. I apologize to everyone for missing last week. Just after the retreat, I just took a little bit of time with the cleanup and everything, so I apologize for the last minute notice. I would like to welcome everyone here. And I'm going to invite you to bring the fullness of yourself here. The fullness. And so give yourself permission to fully arrive right here, right now. And so to each and every one of you who's tuning in from my heart to yours, I welcome you. And I invite you to join me in this space of open-heartedness, to join me in this space of love and receptivity. And so with the sound of the bell, I'm going to invite us just to gently, gently come inward. Gently come inward. I invite you to take some deep, full belly breaths. Just feeling your feet on the floor. Your bottom supported by the cushion or the chair. And give yourself permission to arrive here fully. To be here now. And I encourage you to open your heart to grace, open the space of your mind and allow it to be empty, open your crown chakra and allow it to be receptive, receptive. There's nothing in this moment that any of us need to worry about, nothing at all. So we're just breathing in and we're breathing out and we're inviting all the various chakra centers to open, to relax, and to begin to fill with light, to fill with light. And so we're breathing, receiving, just breathing in and out. And as if you notice, if you give yourself permission not to think about anything, you'll notice that there's this incredible quietude of mind, incredible silence. And I invite you just to allow that silence to draw you inward to that which is innocent about your nature. That which is beautiful and open. And radiantly alive. Radiantly alive. And so together we're just taking deep full belly breaths, letting go of the day, the week. Any kind of internal struggle. And can you give yourself permission right here in this moment to be divine, to acknowledge this quiet presence of divinity that's radiating throughout your feet, your legs, your pelvis, throughout your lower belly and the solar plexus. And of course, this wonderful love that radiates throughout the heart. We're inviting the throat chakra to be open, the mind to be empty, yet luminous. Empty, yet luminous. And as always, the crown chakra is completely open. It's like this bowl just tilted toward heaven. Receptive, receptive to God's grace. In this moment, God has a message for you. Do you know How beautiful you are, my child. Do you know that you are a divine being? A divine being. Not an animal. A divine being. Do you know you have the heart of an angel? Do you know that you have the strength of 10,000 Buddhas? An army of angels within you. And so can you open to God's message? Can you open to the intelligence of the universe speaking to you in this moment? Can you be humble and say yes? I'm not the crazy thoughts in my mind. I'm not this swirl of conditioned emotions. I'm not the pain that I've carried from my past. What I am is this brilliant, brilliant angelic light. This quiet, quiet and incredible presence. This is what I am. This is what I am. And so I'm going to invite you just to join me and just to breathe deeply, to open your heart, open your body and feel, experience, and step into the fullness of what you are. The fullness of what you are. There's no reason to rush here or there. You once give yourself permission simply to do nothing and receive. Receive God's grace this moment. Receive the absolute beauty of your heart. Receive the strength of your backbone. And just to put everything down. And so we're taking deep, full belly breaths, just breathing in, breathing out. And I welcome you here. Welcome you here fully. Welcoming you here. And so, yes. Yes, welcome, Adrian. Suzanne and Michelle and Thane and Linda. Welcome everyone. Welcome Regina. Welcome everyone. And so yes, last weekend we had a very powerful retreat here in Durango. And you know, someone asked this question. They said, Craig, what is humility? What is humility? And so in order for us to know humility, we must be willing. We must be willing to put everything down. Everything down. All thoughts, all that mental philosophy that we do, all that chronic figuring, trying to figure life out. If we want to be humble like Christ or the Buddha or any great saint or master, the doorway to your absolute truth, the doorway to your strength, the doorway to your power, the doorway to your heart is always through humility. It's always through humility. And so it's a willingness to put down the arrogance of the mind, the thought that we know, the thought that we can, you know, that this program in our mind, that we can figure life out. If we can put that down, and simply come into our heart and be open, be innocent like a child. This is what it's like to be humble. And as I sat more and more with this question of what does it mean to be humble, I started to reflect on all these different times in my life when I had been radically humiliated, publicly humiliated, infuriated, made fun of. And experience that anguish, the heat, the fire, being humiliated. And what I found was, what I began to realize was that, excuse me, it's through the experience of being humiliated that a couple things happen. One, we stop thinking that we are, going to be the next Messiah who's going to save the world. We stop thinking that we are right and we are so perfect. That sense of arrogance that we have in our mind, that attachment to our thoughts, we begin to loosen up. Loosen that up. And if we can laugh a little bit at ourselves, if we can laugh at the experience of being human, if we can allow that experience of being humiliated to be this incredible fire and to burn up the ego. Burn up the ego. Burn up, this inner arrogance and righteousness. What we are left with is not egoic confidence, egoic pride, egoic, whatever it is. When we've been publicly humiliated, as we give ourselves permission to come into the fire of truth and to see that this is God's light, this is God's brilliance burning us up, purifying our nature, what we begin to see is what we're left with is this quiet, yet profound strength. Quiet yet profound strength. And it's a strength that is unmovable. It's indestructible. It's a strength that outlives humiliation. And it's a strength that's humble. It's not guarded. It's not defended. It's not projecting. It's not attacking. It's not, on some grand defensive. It's not being a victim. But what you begin to understand is that this humility is one of the great qualities of non-dual awareness, great qualities of true nature. It's one of the great qualities of an abiding awakening. So many individuals ask me, they said, Craig, I had this incredible awakening. Let me tell you about it. And then they go on and on about all the great details of their grand awakening that they had. But then they ask, but why didn't it stick? Why didn't my awakening stick? Almost always is because we're not humble. And I'm not speaking about false humility. In true humility, you know who you are, what your life is about, what direction you're walking. And you're not full of pride, you're not full of arrogance, you're not full of any kind of phoniness. You simply know who you are and what direction you're walking. You know that God is the boss, and she speaks to you through the voice of your heart. You know that you've come here to do good work, that you did not come here to receive $1 million and 8 million students or whatever it is that people think that, would be the greatest thing to have. Whether it's a new car, a new girlfriend, or You get to fly on a private jet teaching yoga all over the world. Whatever it is that people think of their fantasy. True humility, true spiritual awakening. You wake up and you realize, I am a slave to God. I am a slave to truth. I must live this truth in the world. I must live my highest gifts in the world. This is what it means to be truly humble. You live a life of service. Of service. This weekend, my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, I had to take the, one of those terrible tests. It's an SAT test. And she needed to do it in another town in Telluride, Colorado. It's a couple, 2 or 3 hours away in the mountains over some pretty serious mountain passes. And so when we got in the car, I asked her, I said, "Sweetie, do you have everything you need?" And she said, "Yes." And so we got in the car and we started to drive and we got to the entrance of our little neighborhood. And she said, "Dad, I forgot my pencils." I said, "Okay, well, let's turn around and we'll go back and get the pencils. No big deal." And so, we got the pencils and, you need these special pencils to take a standardized test. And so I smiled. And so we started driving again. We had this beautiful drive, through these huge mountain passes, go over Lizard Head Pass, and it's quite incredible. It's one of the most beautiful drives in the United States. And we came down into Telluride. And it was almost 8 o'clock, and I looked at my daughter, and she started to sink in the car seat. And I said, "Sweetie, what's going on?" And she said, "Dad, I forgot my calculator." And to take this test, you can bring one special calculator. It's probably called like a TI-64 or something, or 84 or 104 or whatever it is. And so I thought, okay, I know in Telluride they don't have any technology stores, and we're hours from a major city, and so. And she started to beat herself up and attack herself and tell me how stupid she felt. I said, "Oh, sweetie, it's no problem. No problem. It's no problem. We'll turn around and we'll go get it." And so we turned around and we drove back home, and while we were driving, she kept bringing it up, how she was so dumb and stupid to forget this. I said, "Sweetheart, it's okay. It's okay. It's no problem." And she said, "Dad, I don't want to ruin your night." And I said, "I'm with you, sweetie. This is what it means to be a parent. When you are a parent, you love your kids. You show up. You do what they need to do. If they need a ride and it takes 2 hours, you drive 2 hours. If they need a ride somewhere, that's 6 hours, you drive 6 hours. And whatever it is, whatever it is." And so we did think of something along the way. We called her her older brother and her brother Noah, and he was able to come meet us. He shaved an hour off of our trip, and so I told him, "You stop by the house, Noah, and get the calculator, and I'll give you $100 if you come meet us for your Friday night." And so he came met us, and so instead of driving, 6 hours, there and back and then there again, he helped take, an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. So we got in at 11 o'clock at night. And so the next morning she got up and she got to take her test with her pencils and her calculator. And see, as parents, as teachers, as mothers, fathers, as good friends, this is what we do. We come into our heart when another's struggling. We don't give them a hard time. We meet them with love. To the best of our ability. To the best of our ability. But in order for us to be humble, sometimes it's important that we serve ourselves first. Sometimes it's important that we look inside and we see, I'm in pain. I need to unload some of this pain. I need to let some of this go. I need to let some of this go. And so this last week, I had this funny experience where someone was attacking me. And, and they were going around, and telling some people in my friends and family circle, what a rotten guy I was. And so I began to feel this sense of humiliation within myself. And then there came this desire to come forward and to justify myself and to say, no, you don't understand. Like, you understand that's not really what happened. And as I began to justify myself, I began to realize this was not the way forward. This was not the way forward. It didn't feel good to me to justify. It didn't feel right. It didn't bring me the kind of relief I needed. The relief that we often need when we've been humiliated is we need to bring peace to our heart, peace to our body. We need to acknowledge that who and what we are is divine. And yes, of course, we are also human. And as humans, we will make mistakes, we'll fall on our face, we'll say the wrong thing. We will get into misunderstandings. We will project onto others, and others will project onto us. My God, being human is, it's such a confusing, messy thing. Absolutely confusing, absolutely messy. And so, this willingness to step into humility is a willingness to let go of that egoic defensiveness, the need to defend, the need to send emails and justify to everyone how, hey, it wasn't my fault, it was the other person's fault. It's all their fault. Or to take blame and just pass it around. That's what the ego does. That's what human nature does. But when we step into a true sense of humility, we're willing to let the other be right, even if it means that we are wrong and we're humiliated. Now, of course, I say that with, it's always appropriate to have good, healthy psychological boundaries. So if it's something little, no big deal. Something moderate, no big deal. But if it comes out that it's something major, by all means, you're welcome to speak up, speak your truth. But, we have to speak our truth and then let it go. And sometimes we speak our truth and no one hears us. And so part of being humble is you hearing your own truth, you acknowledging your own divinity, you listening to your heart, your heart. Stepping into your true nature and saying, yes, this is me. And as you step into your true nature and say, yes, this is me, and you let go of the anger, the resentment, the greed, the lust, the fight, the whatever it is, when you step into your heart and listen to the quietest voice within you, there's this power that wakes up within you, this fire that wakes up, this strength that wakes up. This is the power, the true power of humility. There's an unshakableness that comes forward in your consciousness. An unshakableness. And it's from this place that you can serve truth. You can serve compassionately. You can let go of your fight, your war, your anger, your argument. You can let go of the need to be seen because you see yourself first. You see that you're good. And then when you see that you are good, you have the power and the strength to see the divinity of another, even if they are angry at you and judging you and attacking you or whatever it is. You know, it's a kind of a hilarious thing when you wake up and you realize the person attacking you is God. Person judging you is an angel in human form. Human form. Just, you know, sometimes they're a drunk angel, a drunk angel. And so the other thing that humility brings us is humility gives us the ability to step back and to see our life from the perspective of a soul that lives throughout eternity, through thousands of lifetimes. So you see the big picture, not like just the big picture, but the big picture. You see it on a soul level. You see that this contract, you know, if you're in a marriage that's really difficult, or you go through, you know, a divorce, or you lose, you know, a loved one, or you've been beaten or abused or victimized by life, you see that all these things are contracts. They're things that you had to go through. And it's through going through these that you learn this greater strength, this greater love, this indestructible essence. This is what I am. And so you begin to see your life from the perspective of the soul, which is indestructible. But the opposite of humility is arrogance, like your arrogance, pride, or just being lost in ego, overly identified with your egoic nature. And when we're over-identified with our personality, we take everything way too seriously. And we can't see clearly. We can't see the greater meaning in something as brutal as humiliation. Something as brutal as being abused. Something as brutal as being abandoned. Something as brutal as being betrayed. But humility invites you to step back into your soul. And from the perspective of your soul, you can see, oh, look, everyone, my friends, my family, my teacher, my children, my partner, my boss, my community, they've all betrayed me. They all don't like me. They all think I'm wrong. And you see that betrayal is simply pushing you into the direct recognition that who and what you are is God. I'm not just this little human form being betrayed right now, who has to be so concerned about everyone's thoughts and feelings around me. What I am is divine. I'm indestructible essence. I'm this incredible love. I'm a fire that cannot be put out. I am an absolute brilliance and absolute beauty. I know this despite what everyone around me is telling me, that I'm a no good, rotten scoundrel. And so humility is the willingness to step back and to see your life from a soul level. It's so powerful. Everything begins to make sense, even the things that make no sense and seem absolutely brutal, they absolutely begin to make sense. So I've got a couple announcements here that I'm going to do before we move into the Q&A. And of course, if you have a question and you want to ask for the microphone, go for it. If you're on the, you're welcome to type a question on the, on the chat. That's welcome too. I just want to say these before I forget. I'll be teaching at the Science and Non-Duality Conference coming up here at the end of October. In Cincinnati, I'll be there teaching Satsang at the Victory of Light Holistic Conference on the 17th and the 18th of November. I'd like to thank everyone for the donations. I especially want to thank Patricia for her donation. And Patricia, she gave a donation and then she had a couple questions. And so her first question is it correct to say that Tantra is essentially the use of awareness to convert one kind of energy into another kind of energy? Yes, that's what Tantra is. Tantra is this movement of transformation. And so, I don't necessarily like the word awareness all the time. This is what I mean by that. Awareness, oftentimes, when people think of awareness, they think of vast, spacious awareness, which is in the third eye chakra area. That's where it dwells. But for transformation to truly take place, we have to include the heart, the solar plexus, the belly, the pelvis, the body. And so, if by awareness you mean the use of awareness throughout the body, throughout all seven chakra centers. And so it's a willingness, so say like Tantra with the example I gave of humiliation is, in a human way, if you're identified, you feel the pain of the humiliation. And the Tantra is, as you step back, you see the pain, you feel the pain. You meet it with love. You let that pain of the humiliation burn up in the fire. Yes, the fire of awareness, but it's open-hearted awareness. You feel it in your belly, this incredible strength, this incredible power. It's not just, spacious awareness where you see, oh, look, this is humiliation and it hurts. See, that's not enough. Just like mindfulness awareness, that's not enough to transform, to transmute. You can see it, and it may dissolve, but if it's something powerful, with true Tantra, you embrace the pain, you breathe into the pain, you make love literally with the pain, and you love it to death. You love it to death, and so you breathe with it, sit in that fire. And you let it burn up. And inwardly you're smiling, smiling. Outwardly, though, your body may be shaking, you may be trembling, you may have tremendous anxiety and storms of confusion floating through your consciousness. This is true Tantra. True Tantra. And so, yes, it's a beautiful question. Okay. She had a couple different questions here. In regards with your second question, Patricia writes that she said she had a bit of a breakthrough with delusional thinking. I've had trouble with my inner child getting very paranoid about my therapist. Oh, that's kind of fine. I'd hope that you'd feel that your therapist is on the same team of you, same team with you. I'm aware these thoughts are not real, but previously tried to counter them by raising examples and kind of arguing. And so that's not how we work with the inner child. We don't argue with the inner child. We don't try to outsmart the inner child. We don't try to reason with the inner child. We love the child. That's what we do. We breathe into her. We don't fight a child with reason, just like you don't reason with a teenager. You need strong boundaries and lots of love. And you absolutely believe in them. And so this is how we work with ourselves. So there's boundaries around, not, spinning off and delusional thinking or crazy thinking or arguing with ourselves. And it's a willingness just to come into our truth. If there's anything confused within us, we see it and meet it with love. So yes, very good. And then her third question. Okay, so she says, I'm watching Buddha at the Gas Pump. That's with my friend Rick Archer. And then she is also has watched Aja Shanti, Bonnie Greenwell, Joan Herringer, and they were also excellent. Would you recommend anyone in particular? Well, that's a good question. Yeah, of course. There's all kinds of great teachers. I mean, Rick has interviewed like 400 of them. And so this is what I'm going to invite you to do. If you go to Rick's website and you scroll through the pictures, and we can all do this just in general when picking a teacher or a teaching, and just look at their picture, look into their eyes, and see if they invite you forward. If there's a presence there that invites you forward. So whether you're on a dating app, or picking a spiritual teacher, I invite you just to look the teacher in the eyes and see. Should I click here? if we're playing around on the internet, should I click here? Let your heart speak to you. Let your heart speak to you. Let your heart bring you something true. I have all kinds of, friends in the community. I can think of a couple. Matt Kahn, he's kind of fun. He's a little wild and crazy, kind of a comedian, but he's kind of fun. John Burney, I enjoy him. Eli Jackson Bear, Gangaji, Lama Soltram, Fran Bennett, Locke Kelly, these are some others. Some others, Joseph Goldstein, and there's so many. Good teachers out there. And so see, just explore around and see what's available to you. I'm so amazed at what's on the internet now. There's so much out there. Regina Dawn Akers, she's on Buddha at the Gas Pump. So many great teachers. And so explore it and see who calls to you. See who calls you. See who feels true. Some people just love Muji. And others are like, not for me. Not for me. I can remember the first time I saw a picture of Ramana Maharshi. And there was just this call inward. And just through seeing his picture. And then, a couple years later, I found myself, in India at his ashram and meditating in this little cave and sitting where he sat. And he sat in this cave for so long. There was literally just like this spot, like this black mark on the wall where he used to sit. Just imagine that depth of practice. So I sat in that room and this powerful awakening in my throat chakra. Felt like I had like a billiards ball was coming up out of my throat. It was so intense. And so anyways, you enjoy that. You enjoy that. And so thank you, Patricia, and thank you, Trish. Beautiful questions there. Hello, Craig. I've been studying the Heart Sutra and contemplating it in meditation. Is the emptiness referred to there? Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. The same thing as the self or the ultimate non-dual reality. Yes, one and the same. One and the same. And so when you step into vast, spacious emptiness, when you first open to it, it may feel completely empty and void-like. But the more you open into this, the more you experience it, the more it comes alive for you, what you will find is it's so full, so overwhelmingly full, so filled with grace, so filled with light, so filled with love, so filled with power and bliss. You begin to see that yes, everything is empty and everything is full. You know, quantum physics teaches us this. You know, matter, it's full and it's empty. It's both. It's both. And things really begin to shift inside when you begin to realize this. See, most people, all they pay attention to is the contents of their mind. You know, these feelings, these sensations, these emotions, or whatever it is. But when you step into this direct experience of emptiness, you see that everything is empty. Even thought itself is empty. Even this body is empty. Everything is empty. And simultaneously, everything is full. All, everything is radiating with light, with this fullness, with this aliveness, with this divinity. And so in order to experience this fully, you must be awake in head, heart, and belly. At least head and heart. But when you really open in the belly, that fullness, it feels radically powerful. Radically powerful. So yes, beautiful questions. She writes, there was an experience in meditation a few days ago that was indescribable. The only words that fit are ocean of oneness. Yes. Yes. But it's hard to put words to it. It's hard to put words to it. And so, yes, your job is to continue to open, to experience. And if you ever have any great experience during meditation, I encourage you after meditation to notice that experience is still with you. Still with you. So don't let the spiritual path be a path where things come and go and disappear, but rather let the path be the experience of opening and realizing. Realizing the truth 100,000 different ways. In you, as you. That's the true Heart Sutra. In you, as you. One without a second. Yes, beautiful. Okay. From, I think that one was from Jocelyn. I might be getting the names mixed up. So if I get the names mixed up, forgive me for being confused here. sometimes I take messy notes here. This one's from Murray. Hi, Craig. I wanted to ask if you've ever encountered problems with breathing or what you feel. Okay, let me see if I can read this again here. I've been trying my best to stop controlling my breath, but I feel absolutely unable of doing so, and I'm super worried and stressed out about it. Yes, Murray. You know, when we concentrate too hard and we become hyper aware of our body, you know, things start to get kind of strange. They get kind of strange. And so I'm going to invite you just to breathe, just to relax, just to smile. And so if you can imagine, you know, any of us, if we're working with meditation and breath and concentration, I'm going to invite us just to let this go. Let it all go. And just imagine being like a little boy, little girl, just laying out in a green grassy field, looking up at the clouds. When you step into this type of innocence, your breath becomes full, it becomes deep, and it becomes natural. Full, deep, and natural. You're simply breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in and breathing out. We're relaxed. But when we have control issues, Murray, it's often because of fear. And so I invite you to be like a child and let that fear dissolve into the earth. Give that fear back to life. Smile and give yourself permission to be held, to be loved by God. Be humble and trust that you are loved. Be humble and trust that you are loved. Okay. Dan from the Netherlands is, and Dan, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, but he's written me some long emails about his Kundalini awakening and all these different experiences. And so he took ayahuasca and his Kundalini awoke. And he said, really powerful experience. And he sits down at night and all these waves of energy released from his body. He goes into spontaneous mudras and asana. And Dan, this is very common. I've met with thousands of people who've had similar experiences of what you're describing. And this is what he writes: the impression of what happens is that there's an unfolding of a plan. As long as I give the Kundalini the space it needs, it takes the next step. Yes, this is true. It is very elegant, precise, intense, but also gentle. Yes, and this is what I call, the intelligence of Kundalini, the intelligence of the path. All of us can trust that there's an intelligence guiding us. An intelligence guiding us. I'm always surprised at, who comes into my office or who meets with me on Skype or comes to the retreats. There's an intelligence that drives us together. It's different than the energy of like proselytizing, where you say, you should come and see me because I have the truth. Jesus Christ is the one and only truth, or whatever it is the proselytizing is. The reason people came to Christ is because he was open, he was humble. And he spoke the truth. He didn't need to proselytize. And this intelligence brought people to him. And the same is true with Kundalini awakening. It has an intelligence. Your soul's journey, there's an intelligence to it. There's an intelligence that flows throughout life. And so Dan goes on to write, I don't know where it will lead me. This path of awakening. I wonder where I'm at in my process or what the context is of what I experience. What is happening? Why is it happening? What, if anything, will it bring me? And so I want to point something out, my friend. This path will make you a slave to God. It's a path of service. It's a path of surrender. What will it bring you? It brings the destruction of the me. The destruction of the me. The little me. And it brings forward this greater me. And so, Dan, when you sit down at night and you let go into this process, and your body is flowing with energy and being flooded with light and grace, and it's easy to get carried away and to think, oh, this is something incredible for me to have, for me to own, for me to possess. The joke is on you, my friend. God is possessing you. You're not going to get to possess anything. She will possess you. And as you wake up to this and realize that non-dual awakening is God waking up in you as you. You being possessed by something great, something incredible, something wonderful. When you begin to wake up and realize this, that it's not about me. When the little me falls away, the greater I comes forward. And that I is a servant. So just like, as you open to the truth when you meditate, and this greater I comes forward, If you want the awakening to complete itself, the greater I will reveal itself in your life. And it normally looks very humble, very open, very powerful, very quiet and still. It does not look like a big fat spiritual superego. It doesn't look like, I get to have this great experience. And I mean, you can take it that way if the ego gets a hold of it. You can write a blog about your experience at, all the different levels you went through. But the intelligence that's happening here is God is waking up in you as you. And Dan, my friend, I believe you're a journalist. And so you might stay a journalist. But a journalist who has a big open heart, a humble heart, who has this beauty and this kindness that moves through him, this compassion that moves through him, this strength and this love. And yes, my friend, if your kundalini is awake, you may be flooded with energy, my friend. You may be flooded with energy. But being flooded with energy, that's just a byproduct. Just a byproduct. It's not, it's not something that we own or possess. It is us. It's hard to own or possess yourself. And so, yes. Okay, I see I have two more questions. Let me see if I can get both of them. This is from Denny. Craig, you mentioned earlier about dealing with teenagers by establishing boundaries and loving them. Can you talk more about establishing boundaries with challenging loved ones who are not teenagers, though they may act like one? Yes, my friend. Danny, everyone on planet Earth, like 95% of the planet, is a drunk angel. A drunk angel. And so when we set boundaries from a place of fear, from a place of control, oftentimes we will, so if we set like a psychological egoic boundary and say, hey, I need you to give me space, we tend to close our throat chakra, we tend to grip in our solar plexus and grip in our belly. But I'm going to invite something different. If we truly want to live in an awakened way in this world, we come into our heart and we see clearly, oh, this person, they are an angel, but they are a drunk angel. A drunk angel. And so we come down into our belly. And we may have to speak our truth. But it's very simple with boundaries. You just tell someone, no. No. And then you walk away. Or you stand your ground, but you stand your ground with an open heart. And so we want to live in a way where our belly, our heart is open, is awake, is powerful. And this will be in response to your question, Michelle. If we want to live in a way that our belly is open, awake, and powerful, we must listen to the truth of our heart. We must face fear. And so if that means setting boundaries with people who are driving us crazy, or people who've been abusive or violent, or just, a general pain in the ass in our life. We come into that quiet truth in our belly. We come into that quiet presence of intelligence and we let it speak. But we let it speak and we allow all seven chakras to remain open. We don't stop loving the person we set boundaries with. We still see that they are divine. We see that they are God. We see that all of life is divine. And so, say fear comes our way. When fear comes our way, oftentimes our belly closes, our solar plexus closes, there's that grip there. But if we step back into this sense of humility and see that who and what I am cannot be destroyed, and you get rooted there, the belly remains open and it remains awake. But if you clench the belly and go into a fight or flight response and say, oh, I need to fight with this person, I need to argue, I need to prove to them I'm right, I need to run, or whatever it is, get the hell out of this situation. And then we close those chakras and keep them closed. Well, we will never be awake there. In order to be awake, we need to have the chakras open. We need to be relaxed. But in order to be relaxed, oftentimes we have to face fear. We have to face, sometimes crazy people, crazy family members. I had to deal with some real difficult people this week. Say, hey, you can't talk to me this way. I had to stand in my truth. And then you drop it. You drop it. You let it go. And see, when the belly is open, it's relaxed. It can speak the truth. And it can be totally relaxed. And if anger comes forward, you have to raise your voice. You're comfortable with it. Christ got angry many times, but he was comfortable with his anger. It didn't come out in an abusive way. And so it takes great skill, Michelle, to be open in the belly, to be relaxed, to be at ease. You must trust that who and what you are is okay. And Denny, this is the same with this question about, the setting of the boundaries. You must know first and foremost that you are absolutely okay. I'm okay. Even if these people do not respect my boundaries, I am fundamentally okay. And even if they nail me to a cross, I am fundamentally, my consciousness, my presence is fundamentally okay. And see, this is what Christ realized. I am okay. Despite this feeling in this room, the energy in the room, the crazy people or clients or patients or family members or whatever it is, I am okay. And so for the belly to be open, we must step into this and realize I am okay. Fundamentally, on the level of essence, this is where I'm identified with. This is what I am. I am my essence. I'm not my ego. I'm not my personality. I'm not my body. I'm not my emotions. I'm not my thinking mind. And there's a real funny thing that happens is when you step into this power and you set a boundary, most people respect it. Whereas when you're in your ego and you set boundaries, oftentimes they push against it and test you. Now, of course, life will always test us. But when you step into your truth, everything starts to sort itself out. Even when life's falling apart, you see it's all sorting itself out. And so anyways, I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. I want to thank everyone for the donations. So this webcast, my teaching work is supported by donation. And so if you get something from this, tell a friend to hit the like button, do all that social media stuff, but also, offer some support here, some financial contributions. It's a beautiful thing to support the teachings. You're just supporting the spread of the Dharma. And we can support all different kinds of things in this world. I'm always amazed at how much money people spend on coffee each day. And so can you support the Dharma? Support the Dharma. It's not, me you're supporting. It's this movement, this greater movement coming into the world. And so I want to thank you all for showing up with your hearts. That's the greatest way to give, is to show up with your heart and to spread the love. And so may peace be with you all. May you all have a wonderful evening or morning or whatever time of day it is where you're tuning in from. God bless you and peace be with you all. Good night.